minutes ago. So sorry for getting that to you so late, but if you check your email, you'll see the maps are there. So we're in Genesis 24. It's 67 verses long. My plan is to get through the whole chapter. There's a fairly large chunk of it that is kind of a repeat of what's going through the servant's mind and what he does as he repeats it to Rebecca's family. So that should go fairly quickly. So verse 1, Abraham was old, advanced in age, and we can actually figure out how old Abraham is here. We know he was 100 years old when Isaac is born, and Isaac is 40 years old when he marries Rebecca at the end of the chapter. So Abraham's 140 years old, and he lives to be 175. So Isaac gets married 35 years before Abraham dies, and Sarah has been dead already for 3 years from chapter 23. So Isaac was 37 when Sarah dies. Now, 3 years later, he's going to marry Rebecca. And Moses says in verse 1 that the Lord had blessed Abraham in every way. And you see that throughout his life. You see it all the way back in chapter 12, where God says, I will bless you. And then from that point on, Abraham is blessed by God, especially with material prosperity. In chapter 13, he was very rich. And as you go on, even in chapter 21, when he has the encounter with Abimelech, Abimelech says, God is with you in all that you do. And God, he repeats that in chapter 22, I will greatly bless you. And he does that throughout Abraham's life. So Abraham said to his servant, the oldest one in his household. So this servant would be the chief steward of Abraham's household. This would most likely be the Eliezer that we saw back in chapter 15, verse 2, when God says to Abraham, you know, I'm going to give you, I'm going to bless you. And Abraham says, well, I don't have any kids, so everything you give me is going to go to this servant of mine. And God said, nope, the blessing, the inheritance is going to go to a child that you're going to have. So this is most likely Eliezer. And Eliezer is not a young man at this point. And remember back in chapter 16, Abraham was 86 when Ishmael was born. He was 99 when circumcision was instituted. Now he's 140 years old. So basically between chapter 15 and 24, 54 years have gone by. And if Eliezer was already the oldest in his household and 54 years have gone by, this guy's probably in his 80s or 90s or even older than that. So he's not a young man. And, you know, that's only a guess, but he could certainly be older. And he had charge of all that Abraham owned. He's like Joseph in Genesis 39 with Potiphar. Potiphar sees God blessing Joseph in everything that he does. And so Potiphar says, hey, if God's going to bless you, I'm going to put you in charge of everything that I have. And God blessed Potiphar. And so God is blessing Abraham, and Abraham, you know, has extremely high regard for Eliezer, and so he puts Eliezer in charge of everything he has. Well, he says to Eliezer, place your hand under my thigh. And that is actually as awkward as it sounds. Pretty much every commentator that I read, I'm just going to read some commentators to you rather than trying to explain this on my own. So Kylan Dillich, he says, this custom, which is only mentioned here and in Genesis 47, where Jacob tells Joseph to put his hand under his thigh, this is called the so-called bodily oath, and was no doubt connected with the significance of the hip as the part from which the posterity issued and the seat of vital power. The early Jewish commentators supposed it to be especially connected with the rite of circumcision. Tyndale says the servant was to place his hand under Abraham's thigh, which is most certainly a euphemism for the genitals. So it, you know, in our culture, that would be rather awkward. So I'm glad we just do things by handshake. I've got like a half a dozen different commentators. They all say the same thing. Placing your hand under the thigh meant exactly what it sounds like. And so he places his hand under his thigh and he says, I'm going to make you swear by the Lord, the God of heaven and the God of earth, that you will not take a wife for my son from the daughters of the Canaanites. So he's making Eliezer swear by God, and that would be an extremely solemn oath. And the consequences, if you break this oath, then you're bringing yourself under the curse of the Lord, the God of heaven and earth. And so the oath was actually in two parts. The first part, do not take a Canaanite wife for my son Isaac. Just don't do it. You consider some of the other patriarchs, for example. Esau took a couple of Hittite wives. Judah took a Canaanite wife. Some of the sons of Israel, later on in Judges, they took Canaanite, Hittite, Amorite, Perizzite, Hivite, Jebusite wives for their kids. Solomon took Hittite, Ammonite, Edomite, Moabite, Sidonian wives. And Abraham says, do not take a Canaanite wife for my son Isaac. Part number two of the oath, take a wife from my relatives for my son. All right. So go to my country and to my relatives and take a wife for Isaac. Now, I'm going to show you a map. And here's a map of what he's talking about. And so Abraham is way down here in Beersheba, and his country, most Bible commentaries say, well, it was Mesopotamia. Well, Mesopotamia is a huge, huge region. This entire region is Mesopotamia. But when you actually look at the Hebrew words he's going to use later on when he talks about the country, it's Aram Naharaim, and it's this region up here, and it's basically Aram of the two rivers. So Abraham is down here in Beersheba, and Eliezer's got to travel all the way up here to Haran. It's hundreds and hundreds of miles away. And Abraham makes him swear, do not take a Canaanite wife, go to my country and my relatives and take a wife for Isaac. So the servant, you know, he's got a lot of questions, and they're valid questions. And before you're going to travel several hundred miles, it's best to get all the questions answered before you go. So he says, okay, what would happen if the woman is not willing to follow me to this land? You're sending me all the way to the country from which you came, to your relatives from which you left, to get a wife for your 40-year-old son, Isaac. And that just to me seems kind of odd. He's 40 years old and he really doesn't even have a say in who he gets to marry. And you've made me swear this solemn oath on top of it. What would happen when I get there and I've selected this woman to be Isaac's wife and she's not willing to leave her family? She's not willing to follow me to some strange country to marry someone she's never met. What should I do then? Should I take your son Isaac back there, you know, to meet her, to get to know her? What do you want me to do? And so Abraham says, do not take my son back there. So don't take a Canaanite wife. Don't take my son back there. You go there. You select a wife for Isaac. And if she doesn't want to come, okay, well, we'll deal with that. So the Lord, the God of heaven, who took me from my father's house, from the land of my birth, who spoke to me, who swore to me, saying to your descendants, I will give this land. So he's going to send his angel before you. And you're going to take a wife for my son from there. Now, that doesn't mean that God is taking away this woman's free will. She still has a say in the matter. God may have selected this woman to be the wife for Isaac, but she can still say no. And if she says no, if she's not willing to follow you, you're free from my oath. Whatever I've made you swear, if she is not willing to come back, the oath is canceled. But do not take my son back there. So no Canaanites, and under no circumstances are you to take my son Isaac back there, ever. And the reason is, Abraham knows that God had promised this land to him and to his descendants. And he's afraid that if Isaac goes back to where he came from, he might not come back. Now, what's interesting is Isaac didn't have a problem sending Jacob back, even though Abraham had a problem sending Isaac back. So servant placed his hand under the thigh of Abraham, his master, swore to him concerning this matter. And so he sets up and he takes 10 camels from the camels of his master, carrying a variety of goods of his master's in his hand. And the camels are not only carrying the bride payment, the dowry, if you will, they're also going to be used to bring the bride and all of her entourage back to Canaan. So Abraham, the servant, is taking 10 camels full of stuff. And camels can carry hundreds of pounds of weight. I've read that they can carry up to like 900 pounds for short distances, longer distances, like 300 pounds. So these camels are carrying a ton and a half of goods to give as a bridal payment for the prospective wife. And he arose, went to Mesopotamia. Wherever you see Mesopotamia in the Old Testament, it's not this giant region. It's actually Aram Naharaim, this region up here. So every time you see it, that's actually the region they're talking about. It's this region around Haran. Later on, it'll become known as Paddan Aram. And he goes to the city of Nahor. Now, there's actually a city called Nahor. So the question is the city of Nahor the city that's called Nahor, or is the city of Nahor the city in which Nahor lived? Because Nahor was actually a brother of Abraham. And given that Laban, Rebekah's brother, Nahor's grandson, is living in Haran, I would say that the city of Nahor is the city in which Nahor was living, i.e. Haran. So he's going to Haran, and this is where he's going to encounter Rebekah and whatnot. And remember, you can read about some of this back in Genesis 11, the very end of Genesis 11. So he made the camels. So between verse 10 and verse 11, he's traveled several hundred miles. Now he's in Haran, and he made the camels kneel down outside the city by the well of water at evening time, the time when women go out to draw water. They would draw water first thing in the morning for the day. They would draw water in the evening for the night, and you didn't draw water during the daytime because it was just too hot. And so the servant gets there, gets off his camel, and he starts praying. And he says, "O Lord, the God of my master Abraham, please grant me success today and show loving kindness to my master Abraham." So this servant is praying like Abraham would pray. He probably learned to pray from watching Abraham. And he addresses God with his covenant name. And he addresses God as the God of his master, and the servant may well have been a believer in God, but he doesn't claim that relationship in his prayer. He addresses God as the God of his master and asks that God show his master loving kindness by granting success on this mission. And he's praying in his heart. He's not praying audibly. So he's standing by the spring. He's prayed, and he's still praying. And the daughters of the men of the city were coming out to draw water. And he's praying, and he says, "Here's how I'm going to know which one you've chosen. May it be that the girl to whom I say, 'Please let your down your jar so that I may drink,' and she answers, 'Drink, and I will draw water for your camels also,' may she be the one whom you've appointed for your servant Isaac. And by this I'll know that you've shown loving kindness to my master." Okay, so it's not so much that she's giving him a drink, because that would be a common courtesy. You know, if you were in that culture and you were thirsty and asked somebody for a drink, they would absolutely give you a drink of water. The test is really, is she going to water the camels? Which is an enormous feat camels can drink like 30 gallons of water each. And there are 10 camels. So you're talking 300 gallons of water. And if she's only carrying a 5-gallon jar, that means she's got to go down to the spring 60 times to draw water in order to satisfy the camel. And any woman willing to do that for a complete stranger would be the indication to Eliezer that this is the one for Isaac. This is an amazing woman if she's willing to do that. So he doesn't even finish praying. And Rebecca, who was born to Bethuel, the son of Milcah, the wife of Abraham's brother Nahor, came out with a jar. And I'm going to show you another diagram. This will kind of help you see what's going on here. So here's Terah. Terah was Abraham and Sarai's father, different mother, same father. Nahor was a brother. Haran was a brother. Nahor married his niece, Milcah, and they had Bethuel. So Isaac and Bethuel are first cousins. Bethuel had Laban and Rebekah. So Rebekah is a first cousin once removed from Isaac, and she's going to be his wife. So the red lines indicate who married whom. And, you know, with Jacob and Leah, that just gets really weird, because Jacob and Rebekah, Jacob and his mother, Rebekah, are second cousins. And paternal second cousins. And Jacob and his wives are maternal first cousins. So it just gets really weird after that. So this Rebecca comes out. She lets down her jar. She was beautiful. She was a virgin. Had no man had relations with her. She goes down to the spring, fills her jar, comes up. The servant begins the test. Please let me drink a little water from your jar. And so she responds, part one, drink, my lord. And he's waiting anxiously. What about part two? I'll water your camels also. Ah. And then she begins watering the camels. And notice the end of verse 19. Until they finished drinking. She didn't just, you know, empty out 5 gallons and, you know, that's all you get. She kept on watering the camels until they finished drinking. And if they've been going all day, and this is the first water they've had, like I said, she would have to fill up that trough a good 60 times in order for the camels to be satisfied. So she quickly emptied her jar into the trough and ran back to the well, and she drew for all his camels, and she kept on doing it and kept on doing it and kept on doing it until the camels were finished drinking. And the servant is kind of gazing at her, I think in amazement at the enormous amount of work she's doing and the effort she's exerting to water these camels. And he's like, wow, this has got to be the one. And he's just listening to the Lord, you know, is to know whether the Lord had made his journey successful. She certainly fulfilled the the two parts of the test, give me something to drink, and then if she answers, I'll water your camels also. So when the camels had finished drinking, and after gazing at Rebecca in silence and wonder and awe and pondering whether or not she's the one, he concludes, yep, she's got to be the one. So he takes out a gold ring weighing half a shekel, and that's about 0.2 ounces. And this is not a finger ring. This is a nose ring. And verse 47 tells us that, where the servant in relating what had happened here to her family, I put the ring in her nose. So he takes this gold ring, clips it into her nose, and she's kind of, okay, that was odd. And then he takes two bracelets, gold bracelets weighing 10 shekels. So each of those is 4 ounces, puts them on her wrists. And then he asks, and it's kind of interesting. He puts the ring in her nose and the bracelet on her wrist before ascertaining if she's a relative of Abraham. He then asks, and I think this was a very obvious matter of trust. He trusted that God would answer his prayer according to the test he had laid out. And God did. So then he asked, whose daughter are you? Is there room for us to lodge in your father's house? Well, she says, I'm the daughter of Bethuel, the son of Milcah, whom she bore to Nahor. So the servant's trust that God had indeed chosen one of Abraham's relatives is confirmed. And he trusted that God would do that before he even asked her identity. And, oh yeah, we've got plenty of straw and feed, and we've got room to lodge in. So the man bowed low to the ground. He worshiped the Lord, and blessed be the Lord. And I think he's saying this audibly, blessed be the Lord, the God of my master Abraham. And I would think, you know, given the response of Rebecca in verse 28, she runs home and tells her mother's household. I think the moment he said, the God of my master Abraham, like, oh, I know that name. That's grandpa's brother. Runs home, tells her parents, the God of my master Abraham, who's not forsaken his loving kindness, his truth toward my master. As for me, the Lord has guided me in the way to the house of my master's brothers. She runs home, tells her mother's household. Rebecca had a brother whose name was Laban. And we're going to get to know Laban later on. Laban, very much like Jacob, a conniver. And I think the moment he saw, and this will come out in verse 30, when he saw the ring and the bracelets, I think in his mind it went, ka-ching, hey, there's a wealthy man out there. Let's bring him home. So he had a brother, she had a brother named Laban. Laban ran outside to meet the man at the spring. She just kind of up and took off and didn't bring him home. When he saw the ring, the bracelets, when he heard the words of Rebecca, his sister, this is what the man said to me. He went out to meet him. He was standing by the camels at the spring, kind of wondering, okay, was it something I said that made her run away? You know, I'm not sure where to go. And so Laban comes, come in, blessed of the Lord. Why are you standing outside? I prepared the house and a place for the camels. Like, yeah, no, you didn't. He hadn't prepared anything yet, but I think the moment he saw the gold and heard that what Rebecca had to say about the servant and the wealth and all the camels, he came running up. This is a man I want to come into my house. And you're going to see that, you know, with Jacob, when Laban tries to cheat Jacob and whatnot. So the man, Eliezer, enters the house. Laban unloads the camels. And I think as Laban is unloading these camels, he's unloading all of the wealth of goods that these camels carried, a ton and a half at least, a variety of good things belonging to Abraham. He's unloading this, is like, wow, look at all this stuff. Gives straw and feed to the camels, water to wash Eliezer's feet and the feet of the men who were with him. So he had come with, you know, he didn't just come alone. He came with other people as well. And hey, here, have something to eat. Food set before him. And he said, nope, I'm not going to eat until I've told my business. Okay, speak on. And so he says, I am Abraham's servant. And so the first thing he does is identify himself as the servant. And notice he doesn't say, I am a servant of Abraham or one of Abraham's servants. He says, I'm Abraham's servant. I'm the chief servant. I'm the one in charge of all that he has. And they probably had heard about Abraham, but wouldn't have known Abraham. They would have known Abram, but Abraham, they probably made the connection. And Bethuel, Laban and Rebekah's father, would have been Abraham's nephew. So word gets around. And in fact, back in chapter 22, word got to Abraham that Bethuel had kids. So, and Abraham was hundreds of miles to the south. So the servant goes on, the Lord has greatly blessed my master. He's become rich. He has flocks and herds and silver and gold and servants and maids and camels and donkeys. And remember, back in chapter 14, Abraham had over 300 homeborn servants, in addition to servants that weren't homeborn. So Abraham's company was in the multiple hundreds. So he doesn't just have a few servants and maids. He has hundreds of them. And they're all, he says in verse 36, going to my master's son. So Sarah, you remember her, my master's wife bore a son to my master in his old age. And they're thinking, oh, wow, we remember Sarah was barren. Now she's got a son. And Abraham has given him all that he has. And Laban just got a glimpse of all that he has, or a small portion of all that he has. And my master made me swear, saying, you shall not take a wife for my son from the daughters of the Canaanites in whose land I live. You shall go to my father's house, to my relatives, and take a wife for my son. So right there, he gives the reason. The reason I'm here is to take a wife for my extremely wealthy master, Abraham, who's giving all that he has to his son, Isaac. I said, suppose the woman doesn't follow. And he's just recounting everything that he had gone through with Abraham earlier. He said to me, the Lord before whom I walk will send his angel with you, make your journey successful. You'll take a wife for my son from my relatives, from my father's house, and you'll be free from my oath when you come to my relatives. If they do not give her to you, you're free. I'm not going to hold you to the oath, but don't take a Canaanite wife and don't take my son back there. So I came to the spring. I said, O Lord, the God of my master Abraham, if now you'll make my journey on which I go successful, I'm standing by the spring, and may it be that the maiden who comes to draw water and to whom I say, please let me drink a little water from your jar, and she says, you drink and I'll draw water for your camels, let her be the one whom you've appointed for my master's son. Before I finished speaking, Rebecca came out. She went down to the spring to draw. I said, please let me drink. She quickly lowered her jar. Drink, I'll water your camels also. I drank, watered the camels also. Then I asked her, whose daughter are you? And she said, the daughter of Bethuel, Nahor's son. I put the ring in her nose. Now, I want you to notice that the servant's recollection of his request for Rebekah's identity and the giving of the gold jewelry are reversed here. When it actually happened, he put the ring in her nose and then asked her identity. Here, he's flipped that around. And one commentator that I read says, the difference in this report is the order between the presenting the gifts and the inquiry about Rebecca's identity. The narration of the events has the gifts mentioned before the identity. His version switches the order, giving the jewelry after learning her identity. The two passages, however, are not contradictory, since the two descriptions differ, the verbs are actually different. In verse 22, the passage says, the man took the ornaments. This, he put the ornaments. So depending on how it's translated, he produced the ornaments, asked her identity, and then put them on her. So it just, it's a translational thing, really. Notice also that he doesn't mention, do you have some place for us to lodge? Because that would have been somewhat assertive that at this point he doesn't want to risk the offending Laban, you know, kind of imposing on him. So he's just going to leave that part out. So I bowed low, worshiped the Lord, blessed the Lord, the God of my master. He guided me in the right way to take the daughter of my master's kinsman for his son. So that's the story. Now comes the request. If now you are going to deal kindly and truly with my master, tell me. If after this whole explanation, he's basically saying, okay, how are you going to deal with me? Are you going to allow Rebecca to return to me? And if not, please tell me so I'll know whether to turn to the right or to the left. You know, here's what's happened. I've told you the story. I've told you how I swore to Abraham. I've told you my encounter with Rebecca. Now, are you going to give her to me for my master's son? Now, notice who hasn't said anything yet. Rebecca, she hasn't said anything. Now, she's going to have a say in the matter later on, but the culture and the protocol dictated that you first had to consult and convince the men of the household before you even asked for the girl's hand. And it really is that way today, I think. You know, before someone asks to marry somebody, you first go to her father. Do you mind if I marry your daughter? And then if he says yes, then you ask her, unless you decide to elope, in which case that would be even awkward. So Laban and Bethuel, the matter comes from the Lord. We can't speak to you one way or the other. You know, it's not our place to refuse a request that so clearly comes from God. And a lot of the different translations basically say, what we want doesn't matter. If this is from God, we can't say no. We can't say anything. If this is of God, then his will needs to be done. So here's Rebecca, take her and go, and let her be the wife of your master's son, as the Lord has spoken. She still hasn't said anything yet. So Abraham's servant heard the words, bowed himself to the ground before the Lord, and then he brings out the gifts. And I think this is what Laban was really waiting for. He brought out the articles of silver and the articles of gold, the garments. He gave them to Rebecca. He gave precious things to her brother, to her mother. Laban is like, wow, what a haul. Then he and the men who were with him, they ate and they drank. They spent the night. And so in the morning, the servant says, send me away to my master. It's time for us to go. There's really no reason for me to linger here. You've already given Rebecca to me. I've got several hundred miles to travel to get back, so send me on my way. Well, now there's some kind of, I wouldn't say a change of heart, but there's a lingering. Well, yes, we've taken your bridal price. Yes, we've agreed, but can't she stay a little while longer? I mean, this is all really sudden. How about a few days, say 10? And no, don't delay me. I need to get back. I swore to my master, he sent me on a mission. I need to complete my mission. The Lord has prospered my way. Send me away that I can finish this. Well, let's consult the girl and consult her wishes. And notice they call her the girl. Rebecca is probably fairly young, certainly a lot younger than Isaac. So she's a fairly young woman. And in fact, later on, when they actually send her, they send her with her nurse. So this is a young a young woman that they're sending. We'll consult her wishes. So Rebecca comes down. Will you go with this man? I'll go. I like the New English translation. It says, I want to go. So that the servant's initial concern, what if she doesn't want to follow me? What if she doesn't want to travel hundreds of miles to a foreign land to marry someone she's never met? And she says, I'm willing to go, I want to go. So they sent her away and they sent her nurse with her. You know, there's no fanfare, there's no farewell dinner, just a blessing. And her nurse goes with her. And later on in Genesis 35, we actually have the account of this nurse passing away and being buried outside of Bethel. So they send her nurse, they send Rebecca, and they bless her. Typical blessing. May you, our sister, become thousands of 10,000s, and may your descendants possess the gate of those who hate you. That 1,000, 10,000 is a very common motif in the Old Testament. It's repeated all the time. You know, Saul has slain his thousands and David his 10,000s. It's all over the Old Testament. And may they possess the gate of those who hate them. So Rebecca goes with her maids, plural, and her nurse, and they mounted the camels, they followed the man, and they make this several hundred mile trek back down to the Negev. Isaac had come from going to Beer Lahai Roi, and let me show you that. That is way down in the south. So Haran's not even on this map. Haran is way up here. They have to travel all the way down to this region. So he's living in the desert. For whatever reason, Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, they just like the desert. They like that nice dry heat. So he had come from going there. And I think one of the reasons he went there is that was kind of associated with the omniscient, omnipresent God. Remember when Hagar fled from Sarai and God meets her? This is the place he met her. And she names it the place, "You are a God who sees." So Isaac associates this well with the omniscient, omnipotent God. And he goes there to pray. He goes there to seek the Lord. You know, he's going to be marrying someone he's never met. And he's praying, "Lord, make her the right one. You know, I don't want to marry somebody that we're going to be constantly fighting. Please help us get along. We're complete strangers." So Isaac went out to meditate in the field toward evening. And he's meditating, he's thinking, he's praying. And he lifts up his eyes and there's some camels coming. "Oh, camels in the middle of the desert. I think I'll go and meet them." Rebecca lifts up her eyes. She sees this guy coming in the distance, stops the caravan, hops off the camel. "Who's that man walking in the field to meet us?" "Oh, that's my master." And notice Abraham isn't mentioned there. So he's referring to Isaac as his master because he knows when Abraham's gone, if he's still alive, he's going to be given to Isaac. "So this is my master." So she takes her veil, she covers herself. That was very typical in that culture. The bride would be veiled until she was married. You know, even in our culture, the bride wears a veil that's removed by the bridegroom when he kisses the bride. Here it's kind of goes way beyond that. She wears the veil until they're married and the wedding night's over. And this is why Jacob didn't quite realize it wasn't Rebecca or Rachel that he was with, it was Leah. That would have been awkward. So the servant, they finally meet, Rebecca is veiled, tells Isaac everything that had happened, relates everything to Isaac, then eventually goes back to camp and relates it to Abraham. And the whole ceremony, the whole wedding week and whatnot, that's all skipped. Isaac brought her into his mother Sarah's tent. So remember, Sarah's been gone for 3 years, but her tent is still there. And now Sarah's tent becomes Rebecca's tent. And that was also very common. men and women slept in their own tents. So Sarah had her tent, Abraham had his tent. Now Sarah's tent is Rebekah's, and Isaac still has his own tent. And so he took Rebekah, she became his wife, he loved her, and he's 40 years old. And we know he's 40 years old because of what chapter 25, verse 20 says. Isaac's 40 years old when he took Rebekah to be his wife. And it's not for another 20 years before they have their first kids, Jacob and Esau. So Isaac is comforted after his mother's death. His love for Rebekah, her love for him, provided comfort over the death of his mother, even though she's been gone for 3 years. And that's the end of that story. When we get into chapter 25, the beginning of chapter 25 is where Moses ties up all the loose ends regarding Abraham. The beginning of chapter 25 is not in chronological order. It's all these loose ends that Moses has to tie up before he moves to his next character, which is Isaac. So we'll get into that next week. Any questions?
Where was Bethuel? Alex asked.
He would have been there. I mean, he does come into play. Where is it? He is mentioned. Let's see. Verse 50, Laban and Bethuel replied. Usually, you're going to see the brothers actually taking a more active role than the father with regard to marriage arrangements. You'll see that again later on with Jacob and Dinah when Shechem after he rapes her and then decides he wants to marry her, he actually negotiates with her brothers and they deceive him and then eventually murder him. But Shechem doesn't negotiate with Dinah's father, Jacob. Same thing here. The negotiations would go on with the brother. The father's there and, you know, he does do some input, but the negotiations are done with the brother. My friend married someone from Africa and somewhat different where the negotiations are actually done with the uncle. So it's just interesting.
Thanks.
Jeff, that Laban is quite a character, isn't he?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And Jacob, I think when we get with Jacob later on, Jacob's going to realize, man, this guy's just like me.
That's right.
I can't stand him.
Met his match. Yeah.
So, Jeff, did you figure out how much weight that would have been for Rebecca feeding those camels? Watering the camels?
No, I don't know how much a gallon of water weighs.
Well, 5 gallons is 41.65. So if you multiply that by 60, that's right about 2,500 pounds.
Yep.
I'd say she was at, she was Wonder Woman of their days.
Oh, absolutely. And the wells, you know, these wells would be in depressions. You know, so she'd have to go down this depression, get to the well, come back up 60 times. And the servant is like, wow.
Yeah.
Even I wouldn't do that.
Pretty impressive.